Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. My name is Trey Farrow. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today, only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
You are unmuted.
Please be seated. Court is in session.
22 CR 117, the Commonwealth versus Karen Reed.
Okay. All right, so I was told counsel wanted to see me about something.
Yes, good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Last night we received 19 new exhibits. One of the witnesses that the Commonwealth intends to call today, Trooper Guarino. Many of these reports are Celebrate reports that are run with new software and not addressed in the corresponding report. Some of them include data that have never been discussed by Trooper Guarino. There's at least one PowerPoint that is hundreds of pages long that appears to be cut and copy text messages and various phone calls. But again, we received it at 10:45 last night. This is in violation of Rule 14, and we're asking the court to exclude, at the very least, the lengthy PowerPoint of phone calls and text messages that have been copied and pasted into a PowerPoint, because we have no ability to go through in a timely manner and review them for accuracy.
What do you say about that, Mr. Brennan?
Your Honor, all of this information is from the phone discovery, which they've already had. There are a number of different select PowerPoints that were interesting.
When did they get it?
Last night.
No, when did they already have?
2023.
Okay.
And so what you may remember from the last trial is that there is, for example, Mr. O'Keefe's entire phone log, and then it's separated by his phone calls with the defendant, perhaps another witness. And so what we did is we tried to consolidate. Instead of having 50 of these things, I tried to make them more limited. We did use more updated software. The only difference is it shows emojis. In addition, we took the phone calls and the emails or the text messages, which was presented at the last trial. Content has not changed. We just put it in a PowerPoint so that when it's read, instead of just reading the text messages and then searching for the phone calls, where Trooper Guarino would then refer to a separate document, it's simply an order. There is a presentation of a different PowerPoint, which is from the old data, 2023, but it is information that was not introduced at the last trial, although it was clearly provided to the defense in advance. And what it is, it's healthcare data of the defendant's watch, Jennifer McCabe's watch. And what it does is it tracks her heart rate from midnight all the way through the next morning. Now, although that information was available to the defense, they could have done what they wanted with it. That information was never put in a PowerPoint presentation. I will not and do not expect Trooper Guarino to talk about it during his testimony. He's a witness. I'm going to ask the court to recall. The reason I turned that over was to be transparent and to be collegial. We would not introduce it on direct, but as Your Honor ordered, there was an order not to get into third-party culprit evidence. Jennifer McCabe was never identified as a third-party culprit, yet in the opening, the defense suggested something about 227. If the defense is to cross-examine or suggest that a phone call occurred at 227, this would be to rebut that information. I could have waited until after the cross-examination and then sprung this as a surprise upon the defense, because it is powerful evidence showing her heart rate is inconsistent with being in a criminal conspiracy, yet we provided it in advance so they'd have notice days before Trooper Guarino would even testify about it.
So the PowerPoints that were provided last night, you don't intend to use either one of those in your...
The presentation I would regarding the text messages and phone calls. At the last trial, Trooper Guarino read the text messages from the screen, and at the same time, he would look at the phone calls, and he would go back and forth between the papers. This is simply putting the phone calls with the text messages in the chronological order so that on the screen, rather than read text messages and then refer to the phone calls and state there was a phone call, it can simply be shown on the screen.
What do you say about that, Ms. Little? It's content you had, it's messages that came in at the last trial.
The problem, Your Honor, is this is not from a Cellbrite report. It's been individually...
I need to see it. I need to take a look at this. Do you have an extra copy for me, Mr. Brennan?
I can provide a copy, Your Honor.
So Trooper Guarino is not going to be your next witness after Ms. Roberts, is he?
It's going to be Peggy O'Keefe, and then it would be Trooper Guarino. As I said, I can recall him, and I expect to, because there's a number of other events. If it becomes an issue, I can call him to authenticate the phones that we'll need for our further witnesses, which is Ian Whiffen and Jessica Hyde, and then I can simply recall him. I don't need to read these to the jury today, but there's nothing new in it. There's nothing surprising, but I will... make this as easy as possible for everybody.
All right, I'd like to be able to take a look at this. I'd like the defense to take a look at it. You're right, Ms. Little, you're entitled to be able to spend some time looking at what the Commonwealth intends to put into evidence today. So, so I just took, I guess, Mr. Lally's copy. So if you can get me, Mr. Clerk, would you give this back to Mr. Lally? If you can get me another copy today, that would be great.
He's really being called to authenticate documents.
Okay.
The defense may have other plans for him. There's no need to introduce any of this today through Trooper Guarino.
Okay.
He will be not only a fact witness for downloading and authenticating, but he is essentially our reader. I can bring him back today. I can bring him back in 2 days. It really doesn't matter. I don't want to deprive the defense of time to review.
Okay.
And so whatever is the time they need, I'll defer.
Okay. So that's what we're going to do.
Thank you.
All right. And Ms. Little, if you can take a look at them by tomorrow and let me know if you have any objections tomorrow. Does that give you enough time?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. All right. Was there anything else before we started?
Not for the Commonwealth. Thank you.
Right.
Your Honor, I did email Mr. McDermott yesterday evening. He did speak with Dr. Wolf yesterday, and he is not available on Friday. Is there another day that works with work reasonably soon that we can have them come in?
We could do it tomorrow afternoon, if tomorrow is a better day for him. Yeah, they're just in Pennsylvania, right?
Could we do a Zoom hearing tomorrow?
No, he needs to be here in person. Mr. Alessi, I issued an order late yesterday. You were the one yesterday talking about this voir dire. I assume that you folks provided that order to the ARCA witnesses. We don't have an address to serve them. We don't have enough time.
I provided a copy.
All right, so we could do tomorrow afternoon.
We have to make travel arrangements for them to get here.
Yes.
And that's, he has a conflict that begins on Thursday and goes until Friday. So, is there a day next week that works for the court?
Well, we could do Monday, but what I'm going to order is if it's continued all the way until Monday, the testing that he outlined that you were contemplating or were going to do, that has to be done by then. So we can do it Monday, but that testing has to be done by then.
We'll make every effort to make that happen. I don't have a status on some of the shipping components that they need for the testing.
Okay. All right. So that'll be done by Monday. We'll do this Monday. I don't want to devote a whole day where, I mean, Friday was easy to devote a whole day because the jury thought they were only going to be here a half a day. Can we do this just in the afternoon?
Your Honor, I am unclear as to what the subject matter of the voir dire is going to be.
So I am indifferent to this voir dire, all right? I'm trying to help you out by having the witnesses here because I found a violation of your reciprocal discovery. So I don't know how long this is going to go. I would assume I'm giving you the opportunity to put them on and the Commonwealth an opportunity to cross-examine them.
First, in terms of time, we can do it within a half a day.
All right. Do you agree with that, Mr. Brennan?
Regarding an afternoon voir dire of ARCA on Monday?
Yes.
We'll defer to the court whenever is available.
I mean, I'd like to keep the testimony going. I've already told the jurors that they have a half a day Friday, so Friday we'll be back to where we were at the half a day.
Will we have a chance to be heard on rulings regarding ARCA? Because I still have the same concern about new information.
Yes. What do you mean? When?
Whenever it's convenient for the court, but I have concerns about these witnesses bringing in new opinions that we will not have an opportunity to consider.
All right. Can we do that the day of the voir dire?
Whenever's good for the court.
All right. So maybe we'll break with the jury at 12 on Monday. Now they're going to have two half days in a row, but we'll break. So
will we still do the voir dire and I'll have witness testimony prepared for Friday?
Yes.
Okay.
Your Honor, may I have one further follow-up question, please?
Yes.
Thank you. The reason I asked for, and I appreciate the opportunity for the voir dire, it's not lost on me, but what I'm trying to understand is I want to hit the target, whatever the target of the court
is. So one of the targets, one of the big concerns I have is that 105 or more text messages were deleted, and you said in due course. I have no idea what you mean by in due course. It's a pending case. We need to figure out, I need to figure out that at least.
That's and there, very
okay.
And Your Honor, the 30-day, if you may recall, the defense had this very same issue with a matter with District Attorney Morrissey. So you said, I'm unclear what the lesions are, and we're happy to have testimony. The ARCA witnesses can discuss it.
They're to bring them if they still have them.
Exactly. That is also very helpful. But this 30-day auto-delete, a lot of attorneys do that. District Attorney Morrissey
so
did that.
I need something in writing about that. That's not my understanding on how you keep records in a pending case. And remember, you still said, out of the blue, months later, a bill came. This gives me pause about that, frankly. Okay?
We're happy to discuss that as well, Your Honor.
All right. All right. So, all right. And there'll be more. I'm not limiting it to that, but those are my big concerns.
Appreciate it.
All right. Are we ready to start?
Judge, I just have a...
So let's figure that out. Do you want to... You know what? Let's see counsel at sidebar about schedule. All right, so are we ready to bring Ms. Roberts back in? I can take 5 minutes while we line the jury up if you want.
Ready, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, do you want me to get off to you?
All right. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons who have anything to do before the Honorable Beverly Cannoni, the Justice of the Superior Court, now hold an addendum within and for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, give your attendance, and you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This court is in session. Please be seated.
22-117, the Commonwealth versus Karen Reed.
All right, good morning again, counsel. Good morning, Ms. Reed. Good morning, jurors.
Good morning.
Thank you for your patience. The lawyers and I got some work done this morning while you were waiting for us, and we do appreciate it. So I do have to ask you those three questions. Were you able to follow my instructions and refrain from discussing this case with anyone?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Were you also able to follow the instruction and refrain from doing any independent research or investigation into this case?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Did anyone happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case since we left yesterday? Everyone said no or shook their hands. All right, thank you very much. Can we have Ms. Roberts back in, please?
Roberts, I'll remind you, you're still under oath. You can take the stand.
Thank you. Good morning. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mrs. Roberts.
Good morning.
Yesterday, you told us a little bit about when you went into John's home at Meadows to look for him.
Yes.
And I recall you said that you did not see him there.
Correct.
At some point you left?
Correct.
When you went into Meadows, who did you go into Meadows with?
Karen and Jen McCabe.
Have you ever seen any video from a Ring camera depicting you and the defendant and Ms. McCabe going into the home?
Yes, I have.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Actually, I've moved to introduce a Ring video and have certification, and then a small equipment that family video if there's no objection.
Did you say if there's no objection or there is no objection?
If there's no objection.
There's no objection.
May I introduce you, Your Honor?
Sure.
Exhibits 12A and 12B. Thank you. One final. Thank you.
12C.
It's a clip. 12C would be just fine. Thank you. Your Honor, if I may note, 12A is the Ring video from 12 Meadows. 12B is the certification from Ring. And 12C is a clip of a piece, a portion of 12A.
That's accurate. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. With the court's permission, I'd like to play 12C for the jury.
Okay.
Thank you. Ms. Roberts, you've seen that video before?
Yes, I have.
Is that you and the defendant and Ms. McCabe going into Meadows?
Yes, it is.
When you came out of Meadows, did you have a chance again to look at the defendant's taillight on her Lexus?
Yes, when we left the house, she pointed it out to me.
Did you stop and get a closer look?
Yes, I did.
I want you to describe for the jury your best memory of what it looked like.
Karen pointed out and said, look, my taillight. And I said, she said, do you think I hit him? And I said, no, I don't think you hit him. What are you talking about? Let's just go find him. But the taillight itself, the piece was missing. And as you got closer, there's a metal sort of square. And one of the pieces was sort of sticking out. And I only remember it because I thought if someone walks by that, they're going to catch their jacket on it.
How long of a time did you have to actually look at the taillight?
Under a minute.
How close were you to the taillight when you looked at it?
I was in front of it. I could see.
And when you talked about the taillight, you said a piece was missing. Is this the left side or the right side of the Lexus that you saw the piece of the taillight missing?
It was the right side, so it was the passenger taillight.
May I approach?
Yes.
Should I remain, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you. May I recognize what is in that photo?
That is Karen's SUV.
Is it similar or a fair and accurate depiction of how you saw the vehicle that morning?
Without the snow, I can't be positive, but this square piece was missing, as is in this picture.
The photograph you look at is not the car in the snow in the driveway the day you saw it?
Correct.
Putting that aside, is that a fair and accurate depiction of the damage that you saw to the right rear taillight of Ms. Reed's car that morning?
Yes.
I move to introduce this as an exhibit, please.
Any objection?
No objection.
Okay. Exhibit 13.
Thank you. With the court's permission, I'd like to publish Exhibit 13.
Sure.
Thank you. Ms. Roberts, I'm going to ask you to take a look at the photo that you just described. Do you see the white area in that photograph?
Yes.
Is that where the taillight had missing part?
Yes.
And where was the metal in relation to that white part that you see?
If you look at the white part, it's the upper left. It's sort of like a rectangle, but it's vertical, sort of.
And that's the metal part that you were concerned about?
Yes, one of the sides, it's almost like an encasement, but the right side, I think it was the right side, was sticking out a little bit, like out from the car toward me.
Did you express any concern about the metal sticking out?
Yes, because I thought at that height, it could clip someone's coat or something if they were walking by.
You mentioned the defendant asked you if you thought she hit somebody.
Correct.
How many times did she ask you that?
She asked me that in the driveway. How many times? She said, do you think I hit him? Do you think I hit him? And my answer was, no, I don't think you hit him. I'm sure you hit something because your taillight's broken, but I don't think you hit him. Why would I think that?
Did you have any reason to think at that point that she hit anybody?
No.
Did she ever repeat that phrase or question in the same or similar manner again that night?
She did at the scene where we found John.
Before or after you found John?
After we found John.
Okay, so we'll get to that then. Could we please take that picture down, Ms. Gilman? How far of a ride is it from Meadows to Fairview?
I don't know, maybe 8 minutes.
So when you left John's house at Meadows and you traveled to Fairview, you said you were driving.
Yes.
Was there any comments or conversation from the defendant on that ride?
There was talk of Bella's mom, who lived near Jen's sister. There was talk, and I said, where is Fairview? And Jen said, it's off of Chapman, so it was near Spring Lane. And I knew of somebody previously that John had dated on Spring Lane, so I brought it up thinking, could he have gone there if he was walking home? I don't know. I didn't know where he was or why he was missing.
Describe the mood in the car.
It was scary driving, and Karen was, you know, frantic, and she was yelling. I don't even remember at this point what she was yelling, but she was yelling. She had an elevated voice. She was in between us while I was driving, and she would sit back in the back seat and be in between us.
Did you have any words with Miss Reed?
I told her to shut up several times because I was trying to drive. I couldn't concentrate. I told her to sit back and buckle up because it was bad driving. I didn't want to get into an accident and her not have a seatbelt on.
How often was the yelling on the way to Fairview?
Oh, several times. It was like you couldn't control her, and I was trying to drive in a blizzard.
You went down Spring Road before you get to Fairview?
No, Spring Lane is before Fairview off of Chapman.
And did anything remarkable happen on Spring Lane?
I'm sorry?
Anything remarkable happen on Spring Lane?
No.
More of the same?
Yes.
Now, you mentioned yesterday that when you got to Fairview, the defendant began kicking your door.
Yes.
When you looked out, you didn't see anything.
I did not.
And at some point, you ran over to where Miss Reed was.
Yes. Okay.
Tell us what your first observations are when you get close to the defendant.
Well, it was a shape of a body, like the length of a body, shape of a body. She ran over and I said, oh my God. I jumped out of the car. I ran over and she was lifting up his shirt to try and warm him, I guess. So I went over to his head and I began to dig his head out of the snow.
Can you take us back and describe for us what you're seeing?
His body was completely covered, but his head was completely covered. So I started to dig around his face and his eyes, and his left eye was fine, but his right eye looked like it was huge, like he had something happen to it. And after that, I told Karen to get off him. We were going to start CPR. I had been certified at work through the American Red Cross, so I knew chest compressions were more important. So I started to do chest compressions, and I yelled to Jen and told her to call 911. Karen was trying to do mouth-to-mouth. I don't know if she knew what she was doing, but I knew chest compressions were more important, so I concentrated on that. I yelled for Jen. I carry blankets. I have two kids, so I carry blankets in the car. So I yelled to Jen to get the blankets. I don't know what I thought I was doing with blankets, but I wrapped them around his head, just thinking we're trying to warm him up. He was covered in snow.
When you first ran over, you mentioned that his head was covered in snow. Was his head fully covered in snow?
Yes.
When you looked down, could you see who it was at first?
At first? No, I had to dig him out.
When is it that you realized that this was your friend John?
When I cleared the snow off his face.
Did you feel his skin?
Did I feel what?
His skin.
Yes.
Okay. And could you tell us how it felt?
It was cold. Like he had been there in the elements for a while.
You mentioned that his head was covered with snow before you brushed off the snow. Was other parts of his body still covered in snow?
Yes.
Can you share with us what you saw?
His legs were covered. His arms were by his side. He was on his back. Karen had lifted up his shirt, so now his shirt was down, but I was doing chest compressions so you could see his clothing. He had blood coming out of his nose and his mouth, and when I put the baby blankets under the back of him, there was blood on the blanket, so I think he had a cut on the back of his head.
Was the blood from his nose and mouth frozen or running?
I don't think it was running. It was not gushing.
You said that you brushed off the snow from John's face.
Yes.
Did you brush it off from both sides?
Yes.
Did you brush it off to the extent that you uncovered his entire face and head?
Yes.
So did you have gloves on?
No.
Bare hands?
Yes.
And that's how you felt the temperature of his skin?
Yes.
When you brushed off both sides of his face, did you ever feel any pieces of glass sticking out of his face?
No.
Did you ever see any pieces of glass sticking out of his face?
I did not.
How long did you give chest compressions for to Mr. O'Keefe?
Oh, I can't be sure. I would say 4 minutes, 5 minutes while we were waiting for the EMTs. I had Jen take over at one point. And then the EMTs came. So however long it took for them to get to us. 6 minutes.
When you were trying to save your friend John, did the defendant say anything?
She was just running around screaming, Carrie, Carrie, Jen, Carrie, Jen.
Was anything said at that point about her taillight?
About what?
Her taillight.
No, when the EMTs were around and they were working on the body, she was running around and saying, did I hit him? Did I hit him? Is he dead? Is he dead?
When you were waiting for the police and EMTs, just briefly, what was the temperature like and the visibility like?
The temperature was freezing because I remember at one point I couldn't feel my knees, which is why I had Jen take over. And it was, the wind was still whipping and the snow was still coming down.
At some point, did help arrive?
Yes, they did.
And when help arrived, what did you do?
I stood back and watched them work on him.
Did you see first responders trying to give first aid to Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes.
How long were you outside for that morning?
At that point?
Well, the entire morning.
Oh, I don't, maybe a half hour.
When the first responders were trying to save John, what else were you doing?
I was calling my husband. I called my mother. When they put him in the back of the ambulance, I then made a call to Mrs. O'Keefe. I think I called Mr. O'Keefe first, but he didn't answer. So I called Mrs. O'Keefe and told her John had been in an accident. And she screamed, I can't do this again.
What did you do after that phone call?
The police put Jen and Karen in the back of a cruiser. And I was looking in the ambulance to see what was going on with my friend. So I was standing outside of the cruiser. They were inside. I was standing outside just watching. And Karen was saying, is he dead? And I said, no, they're working on him. I can see tubes moving. I can see them moving. Something, he wouldn't, if he was dead, they wouldn't be working on him. She grabbed the front of my shirt and said, are they working on him? And I said, yes, they're working on him. At this point, I think I was in shock. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't think he was dead. I thought they could save him. I knew he was in the EMT, in the ambulance with the EMTs, and I was just hopeful that they were going to be able to do more than I could.
You said that at one point, Ms. McCabe and the defendant were in a car, and then you mentioned at some point the defendant grabbed you. Did she grab you when she was in the car or out of the car?
She was in the car. I was outside of the car.
At some point, did the defendant, Ms. McCabe, get out of the car?
Yes.
Did you go over to the ambulance before it left?
Did I go over to the ambulance?
Before it left?
No.
Did you watch?
Yes.
At some point, did you see the defendant get out of the car, the police cruiser?
No, I didn't see them get out, but they were out at one point.
They were what?
They were out of the vehicle, but I didn't watch them get out. I was watching the ambulance.
At some point, you saw them out?
Yes.
Okay. And did they watch, were they near you when you were watching the ambulance?
Did what?
Were they near you when you were watching the ambulance?
I don't know.
No.
I wasn't concentrating on either one of them. I was concentrating on my friend in the ambulance.
When you were trying to save Mr. O'Keefe, did you ever see any signs of life?
I did not. And I checked his pulse. No, I did not.
After the ambulance took John to the hospital, tell us what you do next.
I left. I told Mrs. O'Keefe, I said, I'm going to come get you. She said, well, I'm going to have Braintree Police take me to the hospital, which was in Brockton. And I said, they're not going to take you to Brockton. I will come get you, because neither of their cars had four-wheel drive. So I asked if I could leave, and they said, give me your number and we'll follow up with you. And I took Karen with me. We drove down the street. At some point, she was on the phone with Erin O'Keefe, John's sister-in-law, and Karen was saying, I think he's dead. I grabbed the phone and I said, I don't think he's dead. He's in an ambulance. He's been in an accident. At this point, I didn't know what was going to happen. At some point in the car, as we're driving, she was on the phone with her mother. And I think when we were driving, we got all the way to the elementary school. And Karen said to me, if anything happens to John, I'm going to kill myself. You're going to have to take care of the kids. And I said, nobody's dying. Nobody's killing themselves. Let's not think about that. And then one of the officers called me and said, do you have Karen Reed with you? And I said, yes. And he said, could you please turn around and bring her back? Her parents are saying that she's suicidal, so we're going to take her to the hospital and section her. I said, okay. I didn't get far, so I turned around, went back. At some point, she was on the phone with her mother, and I got on the phone with her mother and said, I'm going to be heading to the hospital. Let me give you my phone number. It's the same hospital John's at. I'm assuming they're going to the same. That's where Canton takes everybody. And her mother said, please make sure that they don't let her have her bag. There are things in her bag, medicine I don't want her to have. So I said, okay, I will. So we got back to the house, and she got in the ambulance, and one of the EMTs asked me for her phone, so I handed that over, and I said, the mother wants to make sure that she does not have her purse because there's medication in there that they don't want her to have.
Did you see the defendant leave with medical personnel?
Yes, I did.
Before we move forward, I want to step back for just a moment. Did you see when the medical personnel, the first responders, lifted John from the ground and then put him on a bed?
Yes.
Shortly after they moved John from the ground and brought him to the bed to bring him to the ambulance, did you go back to where John lay when you first saw him?
Yes, I did.
Why did you go back to the spot where John was lying when you first saw him?
When they lifted him up, there was grass underneath him and I could see his phone. So I went over and picked up the phone and the two baby blankets that were left on the ground.
So let me ask you, when you went back to where John was lying on the ground, you said you saw grass. There was not snow under him?
No, there was not.
Was there many inches of snow around that area?
Yes.
But none where he was lying under him?
Just me. Okay.
You said you picked up a couple of items?
Yes.
Could you repeat that again, what you picked up?
I picked up John's phone and two blankets, the blankets that I had Jen get out of the car.
What did you do with John's phone when you picked it up from the ground?
I put it in my pocket and gave it to a first responder when they came over, or I handed it off to a first responder.
And the blankets you picked up, were they in the ground area or on snow as well?
They were, I don't remember.
Okay. How long after you put the phone in your pocket, do you remember when you gave it to a first responder, how long you had it for?
I don't remember.
Do you remember the time that you picked up the phone?
I do not.
Have you seen video of that event?
Yes.
And does that video have times when you went over and picked up that phone?
Yes, but I don't remember, somewhere around 6:12, 6:19.
And you don't know how long you kept it in your pocket before, until you gave it to a first responder?
I do not.
At some point, did you get in your car during that morning before you left and drove from the scene?
Yes.
Do you know if John's phone was still in your pocket when you first got into your car?
I don't know.
Was your car heated that morning? Did you keep it running?
Yes.
And was the heat on?
I think I kept it running the whole time. I don't even think I shut it off.
I see. I want to now step forward to where you left us when you said that you had spoken to John's mother, Peggy. And did you decide what you were going to do next?
After I dropped Karen back off at 34 Fairview to get in the ambulance, I then made my way to Braintree, barely. I was on the highway. I was the only one on the highway. I spun out a couple times.
Can you describe what you mean by spun out?
Well, the driving was, no one else was on the road. The driving was horrible. So I spun out almost at the Braintree exit to get to their house. And then I got to the O'Keefe's house and I said, we are not taking the highway back to Brockton. We're going back roads, which is a much longer way, but there was no way I was putting us in the car on that treacherous.
When you went to the O'Keefe's house, you mean Peggy O'Keefe and John O'Keefe Sr.'s house?
Yes, that's John's parents.
That's different than Meadows Road?
Correct.
When you got to the home, did you go in?
Yes, for a second. They were ready and waiting for me. They wanted to get to the hospital.
When you say they, can you tell us who was waiting for you?
John's parents, Mr. and Mrs. O'Keefe, were waiting.
What happens next?
Mr. O'Keefe said something about a Dr. Rice and that they were trying to warm John up. We got into the car. Mr. O'Keefe got in my passenger seat. Mrs. O'Keefe got in the back seat. Mrs. O'Keefe's niece worked at Good Samaritan, so we were trying to get in touch with her to see if we were going to be allowed in because there was still COVID restrictions. John's brother was already on his way there. And Mr. O'Keefe at some point said, he's gone, Peg. And he slammed his hands on the dashboard. But they didn't actually know if he was gone yet. At one point, Karen called me from the ambulance. And on the phone, Mrs. O'Keefe said, Karen, what happened? And she said, I left him at a party. And Mrs. O'Keefe said, and you just left him? And Mr. O'Keefe said, all right, that's enough. She's been through enough. Then we hung up with her. I said, we're on our way to the hospital.
Let me ask you a question. When the defendant said that she left him, did she say whether she left him outside or inside?
No.
Was the question, follow-up question, ever asked?
No.
Okay. Was there any other conversation with the defendant at that point?
Not in the car, but when I got to the hospital, she called me multiple times from the hospital room.
Okay. We'll get to that.
Okay.
How long did it take for you and the O'Keefe's to get to the hospital?
I would say maybe 45 minutes to an hour.
Share with us the mood in that car.
I think I was in shock, and I think they were in shock. There wasn't, other than talking to Mrs. O'Keefe's niece, trying to find out if we could go in for COVID reasons, there wasn't much talk.
When you finally get to the hospital, take us through your first steps. What happens?
We finally get to the hospital. We walked in. Paul, John's brother, was there. We went over to him, and then Susanna, Mrs. O'Keefe's niece, came out from her office and offered to take me to the bathroom to wash up because I had blood all over my hands. So I went into the bathroom and I asked her afterwards if she could take me to the chapel so I could say a prayer. So she did. She took me to the chapel, and then when I came out, she took me into her office and explained to me that a Dr. Rice was going to come talk to the family and take him into an office and talk to the family, and then the family would be able to go see John.
Did you get a chance to see John?
I did.
Would you be willing to tell us a little bit about what you saw?
Objection.
I waited in the waiting area. I spoke to my mom. Phone calls were coming in because people had heard what happened. And Mrs. O'Keefe, the family went in to see Dr. Rice. I watched them go in. I watched them walk down a hallway. And then when they came back out, Mrs. O'Keefe told me he was gone.
Strike that statement, folks. Okay, don't. It's not a
problem. Without telling us what anybody said to you, please just share with us what you saw.
I went into the hospital room, and John was in a neck brace. At this point, there was a trail of blood going toward the gurney or the bed that he was on. This time, both eyes were filled with blood. They looked like raccoons. That's the only way to describe it. I thought he was going to look better seeing him in the hospital because he had been worked on, but he was not. There was much more blood.
Were there any other ways that John looked different in the hospital than when you first brushed the snow off his face in the front of Fairview?
When I brushed the snow off his face, his left eye was fine. It had an ice cube on it that I pulled off, but the right eye was out to here, like a golf ball. When I got to the hospital, both eyes were swollen with, it looked like blood. They looked purple.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
May I quickly approach sidebar?
Okay.
Did you drive the O'Keefe back to their home?
I drove Mr. O'Keefe back to John's house, and Paul drove Mrs. O'Keefe back to John's house.
You went back to John's house on Meadow?
Yes.
When you arrived at Meadow with Mrs. O'Keefe, did you go in?
I arrived with Mr. O'Keefe, and no, I did not go in.
What did you do next?
I went home.
At some point after you went home, did you return to the O'Keefe residence or Meadows?
Not that day. The next day I did.
Where did you go?
Where did I go?
Yes.
I went to go to see the family the next day.
And where were they?
They were at John's house at Meadows.
So they were then staying at John's house at Meadows?
Yes.
Did you go and visit them?
Yes, I did.
Why did you do that?
Because my friend had just died and I wanted to be with the family.
Were there other people that were coming and going?
Yes.
Describe the level of traffic of people coming and going to Meadows that next day.
There were people coming from all over. John's friends, people from Canton, people we went to high school with. There was people coming in and out, dropping off food.
When you were there the next day, how long did you stay for?
Several hours. Maybe like 2.5-3 hours.
Did you ever see the defendant there?
I did not.
Now, you told us that you had only met Ms. McCabe once before that night?
Yes.
And after that night, shortly after what happened, did you speak to Ms. McCabe again?
Yes.
How often?
Very often. We wanted to know what happened to our friend, so she would call me.
I'm going to allow that. Not what you said. Next question, please.
Would you speak to her on the phone often?
Yes.
Regularly?
Yes.
And so things changed?
Yes.
After that moment?
Yes.
Did you start to see her in person?
Yes.
Spend time with her?
Yes.
For somebody who was not your friend, why did you, at this point, form this close bond?
I think because we went through something horrific together. We bonded over it. Mrs. O'Keefe at one point did say, you two need to sit.
Sustained.
Did you ever write down a list of things that had happened to try to remember?
Yes.
When you were spending time with Ms. McCabe, did you become friendly?
Yes.
Friends?
Yes.
How close of friends did you become?
She, to this day, is a close friend of mine.
To this day?
Yes.
When you were at the scene, when you were trying to help John, there were police officers and first responders?
Yes.
Now, you're from that area?
Well, yes. I'm from Canton, but not that side of town.
And you are active in the community at all?
Yes.
Sports, children?
Yes, yes.
Do you know a lot of people from Canton?
Yes.
Did you know any first responders?
Yes.
Who did you know that you saw that night as a first responder?
That morning?
That morning.
Mike Lenk is my friend's daughter's father. No, my daughter's friend's father, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Your daughter's friend's father? And
yes.
Does he have children that are friends with your daughter?
Yes, his daughter is friends with my daughter.
How close are his daughter and your daughter?
There's a group of five or six of them that are best friends.
Are you on a first name basis with Mr. Lenk?
Yes.
When you saw him that morning, did you recognize him?
I did.
Did you speak to him?
I said, Mike, is that you? He said, yes. That was it.
Are you friends with Mr. Lang's wife?
I am.
How often had you been to the house with the children or on your own before that day, before that morning when you found John?
Well, often when the kids can't drive. So when they do sleepovers or whatever, you drop them off, pick them up.
Your children would sleep over each other's house?
Yes.
So you had a friendly relationship with Mr. Lang before you found John?
Yes.
And do you continue to have a friendly relationship with him?
Did what?
Do you continue to have a friendly relationship with him?
Yes.
Did you go to his house the day after you found John?
I did.
Who were you with?
Jen and I had gone to the O'Keefe's house together with, I don't know if it was one or two of her daughters and both of my kids. And then when we were leaving, my daughter said, can you drop me off at Mike Link's daughter's house? So I dropped her off.
And did you do that? You dropped her off?
Yes, I did.
When you dropped her off at the Lank house, did you speak to anybody?
His wife came out and got into the back seat just to find out how I was and how the O'Keefes were. And
how were you?
How were they?
How were you?
Oh, I was not well.
Okay. And did you have a long conversation with Mr. Lank's wife?
Yes.
Okay. Was Ms. McCabe with you?
Yes.
After you left the Lenk house, you left your daughter at the house?
Yes.
You remained in the car?
Yes. Oh.
At some point, did you speak to Mr. Lenk's wife again?
Yes.
Are you friendly with her?
Yes.
Did you ever try to get information, inside information about this case?
No.
After this case began, did you ever come to court?
Did I ever come to where?
To court.
Yes.
And what was the reason you came to court?
To support the O'Keefe family.
At some point, did you stop coming to court?
And I
don't
did.
Answer just yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Were you aware or watching about any type of news or publication on this?
Yes.
As you were watching and learning information, did you begin to contact people at the district attorney's office?
Yes, I did.
Did that include victim witness advocates?
Yes.
Did it include law enforcement assigned to the case?
Objection.
The form of the question, I'm sustaining the objection.
Who did you contact?
Specific names?
Yes.
Steve Nelson, my victim advocate. Yuri Bukenik, who was a state trooper. And at one point I contacted Michael Morrissey's office.
Do you remember at any time being interviewed by police officers or state police about this case?
At my house on January 29th.
So that same day you found John, you were interviewed?
Yes.
Do you remember who interviewed you?
I do not.
Okay. Do you remember your mental state at that time?
I was not well. It was In the evening at some point.
Did you, were you interviewed at a later time by any other law enforcement?
Yes.
Okay, where were you at that next interview?
I think I was at Jen's house. We were making a timeline together when two law enforcement showed up to question her. But I happened to be there, so they took us in separate rooms and questioned both of us.
Were you sober at that point?
Yes.
And what was your mental state then?
Still, we hadn't even had a funeral. So I was still, I couldn't believe what was happening.
And after John's passing, did you still continue to help out with the children?
Yes.
With the court's permission, I would like to play an exhibit that's already in evidence.
Okay.
It's exhibit 4.
Right.
Before you start it, ma'am, I'm going to show you a video from the scene that night, okay? Ms. Gilman, is this sound? Thank you. Could we start at 6:09:50, please? Could you stop there, please? Ms. Roberts, do you see yourself in that video?
Yes.
And where were you in that video?
I'm over near the flagpole.
What were you doing in that video before you stood up?
I think I was picking up the phone and the blankets at that point.
You see the first responders getting there?
Yes.
Okay. Continue, please. Is that you with the fur on the hood?
Yes.
Thank you. That's you in the middle of the street?
Yes, I'm to the right of the car.
Could you stop for one moment, please? Ma'am, you see the other two people in the middle of the screen right now? Do you know who they are?
That's Karen and Jen McCabe.
Do you see the proximity or the closeness between them?
Yes.
You are not close to Jen McCabe in this video.
No.
Is there a reason why?
I didn't really know her, and Karen was running around like you saw. I didn't want to be near her. I just found my friend.
Could you continue, please, to 615? You can let it run, please. Stop, please. Thank you. Ms. Roberts, is this when the first responders were moving John from where he was laying?
Yes.
Please continue. Could you continue to watch the area near the flagpole, please? Stop, please. That last 15 or 20 seconds of video, did you pay attention to that, Ms. Roberts?
Yes, that was the moment that I picked up the phone and blankets. Not before. I don't know what I was doing before when you asked me.
And that location where you picked up the phone and blankets, was that where John was lying?
Yes, it was.
And is that where you saw the ground that did not have snow?
Yes, it was.
At that point, had you put the cell phone in your pocket?
Yes.
If there's no objection with the court's permission, I'd like to watch a little more of the film, but if we can double speed it so we get an opportunity to view it, I want to get to another moment in it.
Okay. Any objection?
No objection.
Thank you.
Around 16, 17 would be fine, Ms. Gilman. Stop, please. The person in the blue jacket, do you know who that is on the right side of the screen?
That's Jen McCabe.
And do you, well, you can't see you now. Do you know where you are at this point?
I don't know where I am.
Continue, please. What are you doing, Ms. Roberts?
Cleaning off my car.
Please stop. Did you mention at some point you went back and the defendant, Ms. McCabe, were in a car?
They were in a police car at some point.
Did you do anything with them when they were in that car?
At one point, Karen asked us to say a prayer, to pray, so we said a prayer.
Is it before or after this moment on the video? Do you know?
I don't know.
If you could continue, please. Stop, please, just for a moment. Do you know where you are at this point, Ms. Roberts?
No.
Okay. If you can continue, please.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.